Hi.
How you doing, Vincent?
Okay, let's start the
I'm really happy to be here, by the way.
Let's start the Hi, guys. So welcome to The Beacon. This is The Beacon is a news publication for our school. It's been kind of inactive recently, but we're trying to get it back on the road. And the first thing we're doing is a podcast with special guest stars such as your fellow peers and fellow teachers. This week, I'm joined by Mr. Olhawk.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Mr. Olhawk. I just joined AISG. I am the grade 11, grade 12 physics teacher. I also teach grade 8 science. So big shout out to my students.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, things are good so far.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Olhawk, I wanted to... Do you want to chat about games?
Hey, man, it's your podcast, whatever
you want to talk
about.
So, what are top 5 games of all time? We'll start off like that.
That's a really difficult question, and I don't even know if that question makes any sense. I mean, okay, so I can tell you what I'm playing right now.
Okay.
I'm playing Hades, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing Oxygen Not Included, Don't Starve, because I always play Don't Starve. Don't Starve is probably in my top 5 just for the amount of time that I've played it. And even though I haven't played it for a couple of years, I think I need to say Counter-Strike is probably one of my favorites just because.
Yeah.
What do you mean by favorite, sir? Let's break this down.
Subjectively, what do you enjoy, right? It doesn't have to be the most objectively great game, right?
Man, it's one of those things, though. Like, I will love a game one day, and the next day I'm just not enjoying it, right? You were pretty consistently a Counter-Strike person. Like, you like playing it a lot.
That's the only game I pretty much play, yes.
Okay, so... I don't understand that kind of personality. It's very interesting to me that somebody can be that focused on something.
It's dedicated, man.
yeah, but is dedication the same thing as being a favorite? I mean, yeah, so Don't Starve, if you know, it's like it's a bit like Minecraft. So it's just, you know, you craft and you survive. So that's pretty much all you do. And it's a base building game. And I really, really like it. And I've looked at reasons why I like it.
Okay, and why do you like it?
It just comes down to the fact that you build the story as you go. There's no actual story to the game except for what happens to you. It's like, oh, okay, so it's the third night and I'm starving. So I go out and I try to find food.
Don't starve.
And I get killed by a spider.
Okay.
And then that's the story of the time you got killed by a spider.
Right.
And then you look back, you're like, I was so stupid. I didn't have the right armor. And so you start questioning yourself. And then you go back and you're like, this time.
That's just rust.
I'm going to have the right armor.
That's just rust.
So you build the right armor.
Okay.
But what you didn't realize that was that while you were building the armor, you were slowly losing sanity. So now it's the story of how you go for the same resource with full armor, but then you get killed by nightmares.
Right.
Because your sanity is low and you start hallucinating monsters that kill you.
Okay.
So what I really love is this idea that you can do the same thing and you get different outcomes. And the outcomes are systemic. They're not based on something that was specifically programmed. There's no cutscene.
Right.
Right? There's no cutscene of, and now you get killed by a spider, or and now you find this awesome treasure.
Right.
I like systemic games. So I suppose Breath of the Wild would probably be one of my favorites if I'd ever played it.
You'd be a Factorio guy. I don't know why you don't play Factorio.
I have Factorio, and I have never played it.
Open it. It's like 2 gigabytes, man.
Yeah. It will probably be. Final Fantasy IX is going to be on my top 5 because I'm still trying to find a way to play
it. So for all the Zoomers out there that don't know what Final Fantasy IX is, or don't even know Final Fantasy because that game wasn't really played during my childhood at least, right?
Final Fantasy came out, I think the first game came out
when I was born. I played the Game Boy Color one.
So there's a lot of different variations. You might have played one of the tactics games, so one of the strategy ones, or... if you follow the story itself, like, you know, you probably have an emulator and you might have tried it out. They're just Japanese RPGs.
I just played on Game Boy Color.
They are, some of them hold up, some of them do not.
Mm-hmm.
But 9 is an underrated classic. It is a brilliant game and it is just really, really focused on the fantasy aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas most people probably remember 7.
Right.
7 Remake came out. Everybody knows about that.
Yeah.
That's more sci-fi fantasy, science fantasy. So that was a really important game to me because it's one of the games that I bonded with my sister with the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a younger sister, and video games and movies are what sort of bonded us together.
Mm-hmm.
And Final Fantasy IX was that game where My sister got glasses from how much she spent like squinting and reading the tiny little text that would come up on that game.
Wait, so what do you play on? What console?
I mean, this was like when we first played this, it was on the original gray PlayStation.
Okay.
So now it's, you know, I'll buy the legal version. Don't get me wrong. But if that doesn't satisfy, which it doesn't usually, I've paid my money, so I'll get the emulator version as well.
Right, okay.
So that's Don't Starve, Final Fantasy IX, Counter-Strike, I'm up to three.
Wait, let me ask this then. Yeah. What is the trashiest game that you enjoy? Like, objectively, it's super horrible, but there's just something about it that you love.
I mean, the first game that comes to mind is Ape Out, but Ape Out's not terrible. Ape Out's a brilliantly crafted game. It's just really, really simple. Trashy. Like, bad design?
Like
badly
just,
designed?
It's objectively horrible and, like, a bunch of ways, right? But there's just something about it that has its charm, and you just like the game.
I don't know, man. I mean, if you'd asked me this when I was your age, I'd probably have 16 answers to Sunday, but... a game that is trashy that I like...
Take your time.
Yeah, it'll come to me. It'll come to me. Let me think. What am I playing right now that I would consider to be a bad game? Nah, man, I play good games.
Yeah, you only play good games.
I don't have time for trashy games. Like, I played that one game that was, oh man, yeah. Okay, so I don't.
It's coming back.
I don't enjoy this game.
Okay.
I play it when, you know, when like you're actually like you've got anger inside you,
yeah,
and you can't get it out, and
right,
you want to get it out.
Uh-huh.
I play this game. It's can't remember the name of it.
What's
now
the premise? What's the
but
premise?
You'll know the premise. It's a guy inside a cauldron, and he's got a pick.
Okay,
and you're basically just trying to climb.
Oh, getting over it.
Getting over it.
That's your pick.
What I play when I just want to feel the rage bubbling up. And what I actually really like the little voiceovers in that game.
Yeah,
it's
actually
really meditative. It's like you're really mad, and then this really calm British guy comes on, and he's just like, you know, ultimately it all means nothing. It's okay. Being mad, being angry, being happy doesn't matter. It's
thing
all
is,
okay.
It's so like patronizing though.
Okay, so that's the thing though, man. Uh-huh. Like, if I go on the internet, that is the predominating, and you know, you're an internet child. You're a child of the internet.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
And that is the predominating opinion of everyone. He's so patronizing. I don't think so. I think it's great. I think it's a really, really nice juxtaposition of a fury-induced, because I've never seen that.
Okay.
I don't know about you. You've probably played a lot more of like the more flashy, the more browsery games than I have.
Oh,
I don't know.
Browsery games.
Like, you know what I mean? Like itch.io games and all that stuff. Like, I've started delving into sort of more indie, less polished titles just to see what's out there.
Yeah.
But I've never seen a game that took its rage so meta. It's so meta, where it's like, it knows it's ticking you off.
Have you played Pogo Stock?
Pogo Stock. See, no, I have not.
Jump King?
No. This is the first game I came across where it was so blatantly
meta. Well, it actually
meta.
Created a genre. It's called like a Fodian game.
Okay, but it started with him.
Yeah, it started with him. So
that's
his name,
my point, though.
His name is Ben Fott.
Okay, like, but that's my point. Yeah. Today, like, you have so many...
you have choices now.
You have copycats, you know. I mean that, like, endearingly.
You have
copycats. You have, like, Flappy Bird went crazy. Like, the story of Flappy Bird is so interesting. Like, that guy got so much hate, bless his heart.
Yeah.
He just made a sweet little game, and people got so mad at him because, like, he removed it from the... Because he realized, like, you know, like... it comes down to my original point, which is the internet tries to tell you what to think, right? And they did the same with Flappy Bird. It was the internet tried to tell everybody that Flappy Bird was addictive, that it was causing all this damage and all this stuff. And he took it to heart.
Uh-huh.
And so he took it off the servers, the stores.
Uh-huh.
And he got death threats from Flappy Bird lovers.
I have Flappy Bird on my iPad.
Right. Because you actually have to have it already installed.
Yeah.
And you could possibly sell your iPad for a fair amount of money because it's got Flappy Bird
on it. It's like an iPad Mini 2, dude.
Right. But people would buy it because it's got Flappy Bird on it.
Right.
Because it was such a beloved game for a while. Uh-huh. So, you know, when you say that, oh, it's patronizing... The fact that I've heard that on the internet so much, like, it makes me think either, maybe that's the popular opinion, but, you know, our opinions are also shaped by what we respect.
Well, I think it was intentional that some people could see it patronizing, some people could see it soothing. Mm-hmm. I think that's intentional, actually, by game design.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Probably. But also, like, how much does a designer, like, really know what their design is going to unleash? They try to make. So, like, you have, like, Don't Starve. Don't Starve went through, like, several iterations where it wasn't mm-hmm. the game that they started with.
Right.
But then they noticed, oh, this is the response we're getting. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should try and tweak this to make it more systemic and mm-hmm. less focused on goals. Mm-hmm. The original game had goals. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, build 5 fire pits, do mm-hmm. 10 of this, do 10 of that. Mm-hmm. And they just stripped all of that. I was like, mm-hmm. no, you're here. Here's your bars. You're dying. Figure it out.
Yeah.
And that became the most fun part of it, just figuring mm-hmm. out what happens if I take this and I craft this together. So, yeah, perception is weird.
Okay.
It's like, I love game design. I love, like, mm-hmm. looking at game design. I like to run RPGs. I run mm-hmm. Dungeons & Dragons and all these games.
Right.
And running those games tells you a lot about the people you're running them for.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you a lot about what they like. It makes you listen a lot more about mm-hmm. Regarding what will make this person happy in
right.
my game.
Mm-hmm.
And what's hilarious mm-hmm. is that usually they can't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I ask you what you want, it is far less useful information for me if I'm designing a game for you
mm-hmm.
than what you like.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll ask you what you like. You don't necessarily know why you like it
mm-hmm.
because the part of your brain that deals with liking is totally separate from the part of your brain that deals with wanting.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll say, oh, I want a game that's like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, no. What do you like? What makes you happy? What shows do you like? What games do you like? What this? So by me telling you, oh, you know, I like Don't Starve, and then ironically, I'm telling you why I like it,
mm-hmm.
I might be completely wrong.
Right.
There might be something about Don't Starve that I don't even understand, and there'll be another game
mm-hmm.
that is completely different, separate
that's
mechanics.
That's the trash thing, though, right?
Right.
When you really like a trashy thing, like a trashy TV show, trashy game, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just because you don't really get it.
Mm.
You don't really get why you like it, but you just really like it, even though you know it's horrible in every single way. Like, you know me, I watch trash anime that I won't get into. Like, really trash anime, right?
I'm aware of this, yes.
Do you have any questions for me, actually?
When did you start playing Counter-Strike?
2 years ago. I started playing Counter-Strike 2 years ago.
What was your life like before, pre-Counter-Strike?
My life pre-Counter-Strike, I was kind of like a general gamer. I played a lot of Minecraft. Not like that vanilla, like survival kind. Just a lot of multiplayer. I've always been like kind of a sweat. I'm pretty competitive when it comes to games. And like just dedicate, like I feel like mechanically, I'm just not a very good player. I will say that. I'm not very mechanically gifted.
Same
so
here.
I put in a lot of time in perfecting mechanics and also understanding theory, RIP. Also understanding theory, you know?
Mm.
That's what I love about Counter-Strike is that...
Theory crafting
and also understanding the fact that no matter how much theory you can craft sometimes, someone can swing out and kill 3 people.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part. There's an X factor, but also there's also the fact that you can have so much strategy and achieve consistency.
Have you met anyone online that became like good friends with? Did you make good friends like through these games?
I've made good friends through these... through Counter-Strike, not really, actually.
Kind of difficult?
It's not kind of difficult. It's really difficult.
Okay, can I tell you a story about Counter-Strike?
Yeah, go ahead.
So you may be aware, maybe you're not aware,
mm-hmm.
that there is a measured level of toxicity in these communities.
Of course.
There is a certain level of habitual name-calling and... raging and all of these things.
That's
that
the
are
fun
just,
part about it, though.
It's true. Like, first, like, again, it's, I think it's a matter of perception.
Mm-hmm.
I never really got into that. Like, I never liked raging against my teammates, right? That was never
mm-hmm.
something that I enjoyed about the game.
I don't think anyone enjoys that.
You'd be surprised, man. Like the trolling is universal. It just, you know, the troll does not discriminate.
Right,
it just trolls
right.
everyone. So
uh-huh.
there was a lot of, I noticed when we were playing, there were these... do we need to explain how Counter-Strike works for the viewers?
Counter-Strike is a tactical 5v5 shooter, and that's all you need to know.
Okay, yeah. You've got guns, they got guns, you got objectives and whatnot. And
yeah.
It sounds really action-y, but honestly, like, after a while, it feels more like chess than anything else. Because
you didn't reach the chess stage, man.
You know what I mean, though.
Well, I know what you mean,
like,
but you never reach the chess stage.
You start looking at it in terms of positioning, and
mm-hmm.
yes, skill is involved, but at a certain point, if you're playing with somebody that's equal to you in skill,
mm-hmm.
it's far more about strategy than anything else.
Right.
And so what I noticed...
Rush B, but go A.
Mm-hmm. 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 So what I noticed was there was lulls and highs when it came to how well we were doing. And it invariably came down to how well we were gelling with each other. So I used to go on, what do you call them? Rando server. Like, you just meet up with like four random people.
Community servers?
No, it was like just competitive, but it was like, I didn't have my own dedicated team.
Right.
I just, matchmaking.
Oh, you want matchmaking.
I'd go matchmaking, right? And the games that you lost were usually started the minute somebody criticized someone.
Yeah.
The minute somebody said something to somebody else, it was usually really quiet as well. It's like, you're trash. And that's it. There would just be a downward spiral. Nothing else needed to be said. But like the negative vibe had been set.
Right.
And then people stopped caring. And then it went down. And so I started an experiment. Every time I played, I stopped caring about my own like KD ratio. I stopped caring about like, I even stopped caring about winning, really. I just focused on boosting my players. Like, I just focused on being their cheerleader, right? And I tried not to be cringe about it. I tried not to be like, oh my God, so amazing. But I tried to, you know, anytime somebody got a legitimately decent shot, I'm like, hey man, decent shot, you know, good job. And I remember this one time that somebody responded. So everybody was really mad because we were losing. And I just kept consistently being like, good shot, good shot, good shot. And this one guy who was like really mad and really angry. At one point, the guy who he was raging at made a good shot. And you just heard the quietest, good shot. And seriously, like the vibe changed and we won.
Okay.
And of course, you know, law of statistics doesn't mean that we're going to win every time. But I think people want to be nice to each other even on those games. It's just that the standard has been set by 13-year-olds.
Right.
And everybody just has to try and like, I don't know, everyone falls into it, I guess. And that's one of the reasons I stopped playing and I don't miss it, is that it's kind of exhausting after a while. I feel like I have to raise morale. It's a game. Like, you should already have morale. So yeah, it's complicated. But that was a fun time.
I mean, the reason I like Counter-Strike, there's a lot of reasons.
Yeah, man, I can imagine.
The core of it is that I like Counter-Strike because it doesn't change much. So if you watch the past 2 years of like competitive play, like right now I'm playing for like a tier 3 team in like Asia, right? And when you see like a pro tier 1 team in EU, which is leagues higher than Asia, like play, you kind of notice how in the past 2 years it has changed drastically, right? Like the meta has shifted barely by Valve. Like the parent company did not change the game. It was actually mostly the players. The players innovated on their strategies and they started establishing theory within the game. You know what I mean? Like, for example, when music was first created, right? Like, no one established, like God or whoever made music, right? Never established music theory, right? You cannot patch note sound. Sound is sound, right? Like, it's the same with music theory, right? Over time, people began understanding what sounds are right, what sounds are like not good together, right? And that's how music theory was created. Same with CS in a way, right? Like, Valve did not tell us you should use this gun because it's buffed, okay, once in these past 2 years, right? But tactically speaking, all of the players develop strategies through the community and not actually through sanctioning. Like, for example, the reason I don't like Valorant, not just because I'm a CSGO player, obviously not, right? But the reason I don't like Valorant is because Riot will just change an agent and buff it and nerf it until like no one wants to use it or everyone needs to use it on their team.
Isn't that what also happens with MOBAs?
Yeah, same with MOBAs. I don't like MOBAs because I just find them boring, though.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that gameplay, but I see what you're saying. So for you, you value consistency of
Rip Second Estonia.
So you value consistency of gameplay, and you like it that it's complex and that you can come up with your. So do you think that there's still a lot more to be changed and learned in terms of
definitely.
The meta?
Definitely. Like, for example, I will like find my own utility set. Like, I will make something myself. And I've never seen anyone else use it, and it works perfectly, right? Or it can crash and die, right? But there's a lot of stuff that even someone that's not a pro can just like come up with and use on their own as well, right? And it all depends on like the player itself and how willing they are to innovate and how they understand the game, plus understand how they can also do something. It's not just, these are professionals, right? They're getting paid full salary, so that's why they find most of the stuff. But that doesn't mean that you can't find stuff yourself.
I'm interested to know, like, how you could translate this kind of, you know, this adaptability, this interest in something that's consistent, that's complex, into something outside of games. Have you ever thought about that? Like, would you like to take the same skill set into something IRL?
You know, the thing about that is I tell my teammates a lot of the time, just generally life, like what you can consider is life skills. And I'm like, look, this is a life skill right here. Just apply this to Counter-Strike. Same thing, right? You learn, like, for example, I talk about innovation and like tier one, tier two, tier three, right? Or whatever. It doesn't matter how professional someone is in Counter-Strike, you can still make something new, right? It's kind of the same thing in the real world, except science has gotten a lot more complicated. So there is a bit of like a gatekeeping there. Not that anyone's gatekeeping. It's just like you have to reach that higher level of education, right?
A lot of the time it's just money.
Right, and
a
also
lot of
money.
The higher sciences, like the problem is like just how do you build a Large Hadron Collider? You need money.
Yeah.
It's, knowledge and talent is abound, mm-hmm. I think. I don't think we have a big issue with that. I think mm-hmm. we have talent all over the world. It's
right.
pretty consistent mm-hmm. across countries and across. I mean, there would be like, you know, if you have a war mm-hmm. and then you have a mass like emigration, mm-hmm. you know, there's such thing as brain drain. But
right.
generally, yeah, it's money. So if you wanted to do, like, if you think about Bill Gates and Steve Jobs tinkering in their garages, right? Mm-hmm. There's this really great photo, I think, of like Bill Gates passed out on a keyboard,
mm-hmm.
or maybe I'm just imagining that. But there's either a story or one where he just, you know, he's passed out on a keyboard like in his garage. So that level of technology was available for the average hobbyist to start messing around with.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have some people who are building wet labs in their mm-hmm. garage to perform biotechnological, you know, mm-hmm. experiments. They're breeding dogs. They're doing all sorts of things
just
right
fix
now.
Fix your mic. Just pull it. You just pull like this.
There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, they're like breeding dogs or sometimes smaller like rats, and they're just like mm-hmm. messing around. Way more dangerous in some situations, right. But citizen science has always been a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. It's become a lot more specialized recently.
Right.
Like R&D in pharmaceuticals costs billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you said, there's always a potential for something new.
Mm-hmm.
If you hold on to that idea that I could come up with something new,
mm-hmm.
and don't sweat it if you don't too much.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a way to go.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear about somebody building something awesome in their garage. I think mm-hmm. it's more interesting than somebody building something in a lab.
Yeah, they built Google.
Yeah.
and yeah, like, probably formed the idea of Apple at some
yeah,
point.
Yeah, all of that stuff happened in garages.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
The thing about that is, like, going back to Counter-Strike and skill sets, it's like, sometimes people just don't, in my opinion, just don't understand that the most important thing when it comes to anything is just being able to critically think to a certain degree.
Okay.
And understand that, like, it's cringy to say out loud, but like there are little things that are like, if everyone has equal access theoretically, then there are little boundaries, right? Like, obviously there's inequality, right? But to an extent, right, I would say everyone in our school are relatively privileged. Sorry, not relatively. They're privileged, right?
It's true.
Right. And whenever I hear like a peer, I'm not going to name drop, when I ever hear a peer just complain about something, I'm like, or like just think that something is impossible, I'm like, dude, like, just put your effort into it, try your best. It doesn't really matter, right? This is high school.
So what do you mean when you say critical thinking? Like, how does that apply to Counter-Strike, and how does it apply outside?
So critical thinking is something that I value a lot. I typically do not like people that are incompetent, which might sound a bit harsh, but critical thinking and being able to discern problem solving is a huge thing, because like no matter how good you are at something, say you're specialized in like a specific area of science, right? Like no matter how good you are at that, if you cannot problem solve, like just say you're like doing biotech, right? And you're trying to like create a vaccine for COVID. If you don't problem solve and think of a new way, innovative way that no one else has thought of, right? Your bio degree means nothing, right? You have to critically think, you have to problem solve. And I also think that's the bell, so we have to go.
So one last question. Mm-hmm. Do you think critical thinking can be taught?
I think critical thinking can be practiced. I don't think it can be physically taught. It happens over time. And also, psychologically, just sometimes your brain is just not mature enough to handle that level of critical thinking, right? Not saying, you know, no, children are dumb, all right? Children are dumb. But they get smarter over time. That's how they become adults, right? I noticed that in the past half year and year, I think there's a correlation between maturity and critical thinking to an extent, right? And me half a year ago and a year ago is out on the outside, not very different, but how I think on the inside, pretty different actually in how I approach problems.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that, man.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome. That was fun.
Yeah. We'll probably do this once a month, not with Mr. Hawk, no, different person.
Oh, okay.
Anything you want to say before you go?
No, this was really cool. Have I been on any other podcasts? No, I have not. But yeah, I'd like to do this again at some point. Maybe next year.
Yeah, maybe next year.
Yeah,
but not with me.
We'll see.
All right, bye.
Bye.